You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
In a world filled with cigars, craft beer, comics, movies, and video games,
only two men are brave enough to search out all things nerdy.
It's the Cigar Nerds Podcast!
And welcome to the Cigar Nerd Podcast. I'm your host, Smokin' Joe.
And I'm Brad Jackson.
Welcome back, people. I forgot to ask you, I know last week we reviewed the Alec Bradley Tempest. You finally got a chance to try the Maduro. What'd you think of that?
You know what? I was a bigger fan of the Maduro. I know the wrapper doesn't make everything, but I think as far as aroma, it was much more up my alley. I think just that little added sweetness is what the cigar needed. And I found it to be still not my favorite cigar, but it was more enjoyable than the natural that I smoked.
Yeah, like I said, I've been smoking a few of those. I kind of like the Maduro version. Yeah, well, let's move on to this week's cigar. What are we smoking this week's, Brad?
We are smoking the Perdomo Habana Barrel Aged Maduro. So this is going to be I'm going to say probably more of a medium to full on this. You've got the Maduro Nicaraguan wrapper with Nicaraguan binder filler.
This is an all Nicaraguan cigar with fillers coming from three different areas in Nicaragua: Condega, Jalapa, and Esteli, Nicaragua. And I gotta say, I've smoked a couple of these this weekend, and it's a pretty good smoke. It's definitely got a, like, when you initially like taste it and smell it before you even light it, you can definitely pick up that hints of it being aged in a bourbon barrel. It's got that kind of sweet, sweet and woody flavor from aging in the bourbon barrels.
Oh yeah, and I definitely picked up on that. Even on my pre-light. So you're looking at your, age for at least 6 years for the traditional Maduro fermentation, but then also 14 months in the bourbon barrels.
Yeah, so it definitely picks up that woody and vanilla flavors from the bourbon barrels. It's got a lot of hints of cocoa and coffee. That kind of balance nicely with that sweet, hint of bourbon.
Yeah, and I gotta say the aroma. I'm definitely getting a good mouthfeel as far as the smoke is concerned. Kind of interesting to see this one burning more of a little bit of a bluer tint of smoke instead of the ghost white that you sometimes see. But the smoke itself's got a good mouthfeel to it, and the cigar. I'm definitely getting a lot more woody. Not so much spice. I haven't hit any spice, and I've been sick for the last couple of days, so my throat's extra sensitive. So if there was any spice there, I would definitely be feeling it right now. But, this seems to kind of be a little bit of a creamy, woody, just all around good, relaxing cigar.
This might be a little the medicine you need to get over your sickness. A
little vitamin C.
Yep. Oh, This brings us to this week's episode. This is kind of a throwback back to like episode 2 of the Cigar Nerds when we did the Bruce Campbell episode. The Ash versus Evil Dead series wrapped up, and we've finally got around to watching it in its entirety. So this is going to be our Ash versus Evil Dead review.
So light your smokes, prepare your boomsticks, and let's get to kicking some ass.
Make sure your chainsaws are full of gas, and we'll be right back.
My uncle is a shaman. When I was a kid, he would say, "Evil is always waiting in the shadows, and only one man would rise to stand against it."
Yeah, looking good. Looking sweet. What the hell?
Pablo, I'm gonna tell you something I've never told anyone. 30 years ago, my friends and I spent the night at a cabin. We found the Necronomicon Ex Mortis, the Book of the Dead. Certain passages were recited. It awoke something in the woods. Something evil. I was the only one to escape. But now, the evil has found me.
First thing I gotta do is see a guy about a book.
There must be some spell I can say to undo all this.
The other first thing I gotta do is some cardio, because my heart is jackhammering like a quarterback on prom night.
And we're back. So ready to read from the Necronomicon and summon up some deadites?
You know, I've never had too much luck summoning deadites.
Okay, this is.
I feel as if I may have been responsible for a few celebrity deaths, but no deadites.
Oh, and you know, we're here at episode 37. I feel like we should have like saved Kevin Smith for the episode 37.
Yes.
Oh, but yeah, like I said, this is kind of a flashback to episode 2. We're talking about, as I said then, Bruce fucking Campbell. The man, the hero that we, you know, we deserve.
Is he a hero or is he, I don't know, man. Like, I mean, he's almost anti-hero. Like, he causes as much bad shit as he does good. Like,
that's like, usually it's like he's, you know, or Ash is, you know, Ashley Williams pretty much causes the bad shit that he has to fight. Like, if he never did anything, we wouldn't have all these problems. So usually he's just, you know, he's a hero because he's having to clean up his own mess.
I mean, that's the thing, man. Like, stop making all the poor decisions and then stop denying when you make a poor decision. Just clean that shit up. Like, it shouldn't take you five times of denial and then be like, oh, yeah, I should actually do something about this. Because despite being a hard ass, I do care.
And like I said, we are talking about the Starz TV series. Of course, if you know, you're not sure what Evil Dead is, you know, what are you doing with your life? Go back and watch those, because that's, I don't feel like you can't be a sci-fi nerd pop culture enthusiast if you don't know Ash, you know, in the Army of Darkness and Evil Dead. You know, we've had three movies starring Bruce Campbell: Evil Dead, Evil Dead 2, and Army of Darkness, and then the remake a couple years ago, which was actually fairly good. But since that came out, we've had so many rumors about, there's been rumors for years about another Evil Dead movie. And even after these movies came out, they said that, you know, there was going to be a whole new trilogy with like the new cast. And then they were going to like bring Ash in, because apparently this all happened in the same universe or whatever. And then that turned out to be, I feel like, Bruce Campbell and, oh, fuck, who's the director? I'm blanking.
Hold on. You're looking for director or the producer?
No, the guy who started Evil Dead. Sam Raimi.
Sam Raimi, yeah.
I feel like they come up with that. They're like, yeah, let's do this. And then they figure out, like, oh, yeah, we can't get the money for it. Or they get distracted and do other stuff. So they're constantly saying, yeah, this thing's going to happen. And then it never happens. But then they finally, instead of this whole movie thing, they're like, all right, you're going to get a TV series out of it. So you're going to get way more Ash than, you know, a single hour and a half movie can contain.
Yeah, and I thought it was good, too, that they did it on Starz Networks. They didn't have to worry about the censorship. So very much to the feel of, you know, the Evil Dead films. I mean, this carried it all the way through.
Yeah, you were allowed to cuss, have sexual content.
You know what? There really wasn't a...
Buckets and buckets of blood.
I mean, definitely the buckets and buckets of blood. But
like a truck tanker of fake blood, I think, was used in the filming of this.
My God, I wouldn't surprise me if half of it was used in just a couple of scenes. But I mean, it's just so over the top in instances, and that's what you love and come to expect, and I enjoy it.
Oh. Before we get into the specifics on the episode, let's talk about the, you know, of course we know Bruce Campbell is Ash, the one-handed demon hunter himself, but we've also got a whole bunch of new characters that have joined the ranks, and that was kind of one of the interesting things they did with the series, is it wasn't just Ash on his own anymore. You know, he had to deal with a whole cast of characters because, you know, normally if you know Ash, you're probably going to die. Yeah. Like, he usually has to go through this stuff alone. And, you know, they kind of tried to bring in, like, a, I don't know, a younger generation of Demon Hunter and other characters to help him out.
And I got to say, for the most part, everybody kind of came into their own badassdom. Yeah. Is that really a thing? I guess Knights of Badassdom, they did it, so why
that
not?
That was a cool movie.
We'll use it, but, you know, I mean, they instead of being, you know, damsels in distress or just absolutely clueless, like, no, they developed their own skill strengths and, you know, essentially formed their own mini wolf pack. So that was kind of interesting seeing, I mean, outside of till the later season, like, for the most part, people that came into contact with Ash were kind of badass in their own right.
Yeah, he, like, let's start with his sidekick, Pablo Bolivar, played by Ray Santiago. Basically, in this series, Ash is, again, a stock boy at some... It's not S-Mart, it's Value Mart. But, yeah, he's got a sidekick that kind of thinks he's a total badass, and even though he's kind of a washed-up loser at this point in his life... and Pablo was an interesting character. He, like I said,
Yeah, I really underestimated his character at the beginning of the season. Like, you see him as kind of the advice giver. Like, nah, man, I believe in you. You can do greater things with your life. Yada, yada, yada. Kind of like, you know, there for the encouragement aspect of things. But later in the season, the fact that we find out that Pablo was, you know, freaking raised by a shaman. Pablo comes in his own right at that point.
The brujo.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, let's go ahead and talk about episode one as we introduce these characters. And I think that'll be easier. And out of the, you know, 10-episode arc, the only one that was actually directed by Sam Raimi was the pilot, the first episode. And I just got to say, out of all the episodes, that one probably had the most... felt most like the originals, because, I mean...
Yeah, I mean, that had the original feel. Now, I will say that later on in the episodes, when they make it to the cabin, and the throwbacks to the cabin, that very much felt Evil Dead 2, but I'm kind of skipping ahead a little bit.
Yeah,
so.
But with, like I said, the first episode, it's, you know, it's... It had that comedic element that I don't know if the rest of the season had as much of, where it was... slapsticky, like Evil Dead and Army of Darkness was. Like, especially,
well, if you were going to resurrect the Deadites, what better way for Ash to get stoned and be like, hey, let me recite some poetry, and that poetry be from the Necronomicon itself.
Yeah. And like I said, Ash is a total loser at this point. He's living in a old Airstream camper that is way bigger on the inside than it is on the outside. It was definitely two different sets. I've been in an Airstream. They are not that big. But yeah,
it's those wide angle camera lenses, man. I'm telling you.
He goes to this bar, and like the bar has like axes on the window. I forgot what it was called, but yeah, it was definitely like a place that Ash would hang out, and basically uses like his severed hand, like a bullshit story about his severed hand, how he lost it saving a kid on a train tracks to, you know, lure some unsuspecting girl in and have sex with her in the bathroom. And she turns into a deadite while he's having sex with her.
And, you know, it's kind of funny because he realizes it at first.
And then he thinks he's just kind of hallucinating or whatever, and then just like, all right, goes back and finishes.
I mean, why interrupt when you got a good thing going, I suppose? I don't know.
But then he goes back, pulls out the Necronomicon, and he's like, why is there just a bag of weed in here? And then he's like, has like a flashback of like, oh yeah, I got stoned and read this chick poetry from the Necronomicon to hook up with her. And yeah, he, of course... If the Evil Dead's going to come back, it's freaking because Ash has done something stupid. But even then, he doesn't want to take up the hero role again. He tries to, you know, leave town and...
Yeah, he essentially run.
Yeah. And when he gets attacked by the little dolls in the stockroom, that so reminded me of, like, the Ash versus the Little Ashes fight from Army of Darkness.
Yes.
And like I said, it very had that very like slapsticky feel where he, you know, he eventually like comes out on top, but he usually gets his ass kicked in the process of fighting evil.
Yeah, I mean, that was one of the things that I really enjoyed about the first episode specifically, was just the comedic aspect. Now that kind of carries on, but it's in more subtle degree
yeah.
as the season progresses.
Like I said, it's definitely, you can definitely tell the difference in the other directors, that how they handled the other episodes versus the one that was specifically directed by Raimi. And then, like,
we also get introduced to, I think, another pivotal character was, Amanda Fisher.
Yes, because...
the police detective.
You know, at first, you don't... her and Ash doesn't really cross paths. There's this whole, like, two-storyline where the girl that Ash read poetry to, she gets possessed by a deadite, and Amanda Fisher, who is a Michigan State Trooper detective, her and her partner go to investigate what they think's a domestic, and they get there, and it's, like, some Evil Dead shit, and her partner gets possessed, and she has to kill her partner. And everybody just thinks she's crazy, and even she thinks she's crazy, but in the process, she's investigating kind of like the aftermath of what Ash has done, and they eventually cross paths, you know, several, you know, episodes later.
Yeah,
but
we also get Ruby Nobi, Lucy Lawless.
Yeah, who is supposed to be the daughter of the professor that found the original Necronomicon from the original Evil Dead movies, and Ash's girlfriend that was killed is supposedly her sister, and she kind of blames Ash for all this stuff. And at first, you know, she's hunting Ash to try to end all the trouble he's causing.
So, yep. And then, you know, Pablo, we get introduced, but then also to Kelly, we get introduced to her character.
Played by Dana DeLorenzo, I believe. Back to Pablo for a minute. Like, when we first, you know, meet him, he ends up kind of halfway saving Ash by squishing the doll with a shovel. And you would think someone who just killed a demonic doll would be more freaked out, but he's like, my uncle was a brujo. He told me about evil and stuff. And Ash is like, yeah. Tells him the whole kind of backstory of, which I thought that was kind of cool, how they just, like, projected scenes from Evil Dead, like, on the wall as he's kind of explaining. And it's almost that same speech from the opening of Evil Dead about the Necronomicon, but it's, instead of, like, whatever voice narrator it was, it's Ash giving that same speech and then kind of showing the video from Evil Dead 2 on the wall. But then he's like, you know, Pablo's like, yeah, my uncle, you know, told me about this, that, you know, that there was supposed to be a prophesized hero, you know, they called El Jefe, that would save us from the evil. And he's like, I think you're El Jefe, Ash. And he's like, you got the wrong dude, Pablo. I got to get the fuck out of here.
Yeah, to think of freaking...
he's gone full Murtaugh. He's like, I'm getting too old for this shit.
Too old for this shit, Riggs. I'm out.
That and the... I mean, they brought back the whole camera that chases people that... is something completely horrendous, but you never actually get to see what it is. You just get to see people, like, freak out and run from it. And but I said, like, toward the end of that episode, when they finally get back to Ash's van or camper or whatever, and they get attacked by Ash's neighbors who are now deadites, you finally see him transition back to the hero that, you know, like...
The wooden hand comes off and the chainsaw takes its place.
But, like, even before that, yeah, she's getting Kelly's getting attacked by, you know, Deadeye Arm is, like, you know, reaching the door, like, choking her out. And he finally just, like, you know, grabs an axe and throws it, cuts the arm off, and then just pulls his shirt off. And he's wearing the blue jean shirt that from all the other movies. And he straps on his rig and freaking steps on the little thing, and the boomstick comes out of the an ejector plate in the floor where the boomstick flies up. Oh, and then, like I said, but he gets the chainsaw. I'm like, he's back.
And I gotta say, the car that he's towing his camper with, the freaking, what is it, the Nova?
It's an old Oldsmobile.
Oldsmobile, yeah. Like, I feel like that is the original car.
It is. Like, that car actually belongs to Sam Raimi. He's, like, kept it all these years. It's like his signature now. That thing shows up in every movie.
And you know what? I gotta give a shout out to Pablo as well for, you know, his mad macking skills, trying to, you know, get the attention of Kelly.
Yeah, like,
we'll progress as their relationship progresses throughout the series. God, I'm just gonna go ahead and set the stage. This is you know, the epitome of the friend zone.
Yeah, he's got friend zoned hard.
I mean, he came so close once.
Yeah, but he was kind of, he's too much of a chicken shit.
I mean, would you go after a possessed girl?
Hey, I mean,
I mean, I'm maybe. Just saying, I guess desperate times call for desperate measures.
I mean, he didn't know she was possessed. I mean,
he kind of did, though.
Oh, but yeah, I mean, that whole first episode when they finally like reintroduce the hero Ash that we know, and yeah, he finally kind of accepts his role as El Jefe. Like I said, it was.
I would say half-heartedly accepts. Yeah. I mean, he tries to back out several times. But, I mean, that first episode, though, I mean, it really set the stage, and it truly felt like Evil Dead.
Oh, yeah. And when he's using the chainsaw, and blood is just splattering all over everyone. Just, I mean, it's such... It's Evil Dead at that point. I mean, yeah. It's the comedic... ridiculous amount of blood that comes out when he kills somebody, and the next scene he'll be completely clean again. Like, the dude must have like a trunk load of those shirts and is just like constantly changing.
And I guess everybody felt like it was Evil Dead because, you know, 3 days before the series premiered, Starz had already renewed the series for a second season.
Yeah, so we're gonna get another 10 episode at least out of it. And that when he breaks out the chainsaw, like, I literally, like, cheered. And then at the end, she's like, yeah, how do you feel, Ash? He's like, groovy. I mean, that was just... You're like, we're back, man. We're back in the Evil Dead world.
Yes. it was everything I think I could have hoped for. Like, it didn't leave me feeling empty or saying, you know, what the fuck? I was like, you know what? If this is the way that the Deadites are going to reemerge, like, that's how I envision it happening.
Yeah. Like... Ash doing something stupid.
Yes.
Because like I said, he causes as much destruction as he stops. And then, like, there's a whole scene where Hal Kelly gets involved in something that she, you know, is talking to her dad on the phone, and her mom, who's supposedly dead, like, returns. So they're like, oh, it's a freaking Deadite. Well, she runs off to try to save her dad.
So we're going to talk about episode 2 now.
Yeah, we're moving on to episode 2. She runs off to save her dad, and Ash and Pablo come to save her because they think she's walking into like a Deadite trap.
Well, essentially, to Ash's defense, he's kind of been tricked into saving her.
Yeah.
Because there's a little ploy there that...
Yeah, Pablo says she took the Necronomicon with her.
Yes. So Ash is like, shit, she's got the book, so now we have to go get her.
And the fight scene in the car on the way where Ash's boss, who's now possessed, like, is in the back seat of the car, and they're trying to kill him with a bottle. It's just,
I mean, but it works. I mean, it fucking
eventually.
Works. Pablo's like, you know, I love once they actually arrive to the ranch, and Ash grabs I think it was a chainsaw.
He's got the chainsaw,
maybe
the
chainsaw and the boomstick. And he's, you like, know, he hands Pablo the bottle back. And, you know, he's like, what? It's an effective weapon. Yeah, but it took like 20 times. It killed him, though, didn't it?
He's like, don't worry. I sharpened it for you. It'll work much better this time. And they just go kicking in the door. And, like, you know, they're all sitting there having, like, you know, a family moment. And they're, like, all covered in blood, like, with weapons and stuff. They're all like, what the hell is going on? And Ash's like, we were hunting.
Dad's like, I'm a hunter.
He's like, I've never seen a deer explode.
You've never hunted with us. I mean, it was they were so out of place.
But yeah, when they invite them to dinner too, and the whole thing is.
Oh, I love how Ash, like, is on to the mother the entire time,
yeah, she,
but nobody else is believing
him. Absolutely believes she, but, like, she's like, oh, no, she was in an accident and they never found the body, and she was actually been living in a homeless shelter because she had amnesia. She's not really dead-eyed. It's just a big misunderstanding. But nobody, like, Ash does not believe it. And it's cool the way they kind of shot it because, like, you know, they're having steak, and... Like, the steak is, like, so raw, it's still bleeding, and the mom's eating, and, like, blood's just, like, running around. But Ash is kind of looking at everybody else, and no one else is reacting to it, so he's kind of starting to think,
all right, I'm hallucinating.
This is just another hallucination. And, you know, he's like, kind of grilling her on questions. She's like, do you have any more questions? He's like, yeah, you know, only one. And just punches her in the face, just like cold cocks her.
And she falls out.
And like, everybody's like, oh my God, what are you doing?
And then, and dude, I was almost convinced that she was human because she lays there like no reaction, no nothing.
And everybody just starts yelling at Ash, and then she like stands up all like, you know,
dead-eyed.
And he's like, see, kid, I told you, a good punch in the mouth always gets the juices flowing. And he looks at her and he's like, you know, you had me going there for a minute. I was starting to feel really bad.
Yep, and I don't know. I mean, that kind of set the stage. I mean, I really enjoyed this episode, and you know, just the fight that ensues, you know, after you know, the mom becomes a deadite, and you know that when, you know, basically Kelly runs off to, I guess it's her childhood room or whatever, and her mom's kind of sitting on the bed like reading a story or something like that, like, I don't know. That episode was pretty brutal.
Yeah. So that kind of brings her into, all right, this, you know, because at that point, even though she's seen monsters,
shit is real.
She kind of still thinks Ash is like full of shit. And, but yeah, she starts to kind of like, all right, this is real. And now she's trying to step up and be a badass. You know, she wants to kind of get revenge on these monsters. And so, like, you know, she joins the, that, and then Ash buries her parents and makes little crosses, and she's like, you know they were Jewish, right? He's like, no, I did not. You could have told me that before I made these stupid crosses. It's just like awkward.
Yep. Probably one of the worst closing lines ever to an episode, but it's Evil Dead. Yeah. You gotta expect it.
And then from there they go to a
let's talk about the library.
Yes.
Books from Beyond.
Which, that's a cool bookstore. I want to go hang out there.
I mean, I just want to sit down and have a cigar and, you know, well, I can't have the opportunity now because he's dead, but I would love to have a conversation with Lionel.
Oh, yeah, because, I mean, they end up going to this guy who supposedly can translate the book because Ash is looking for the off switch to close everything. And the guy's like, well, I can't really, like, you know, figure it out. It's like a dead language or whatever. And he's like, well, can you read some of it? He's like, yeah. He's like, all right, well, find the, like, the weakest monster in there, summon it, and we'll grill it for information, which is a bad idea.
Well, I mean, they've got, you know, the typical, you know, I don't know. It really wasn't a pentagram. It looked more like the Star of David with a circle around it or something, but... You know, they're like, as long as this is a containment, so as long as this circle's unbroken.
Yeah,
like,
if, you know, if anybody who's watched Supernatural, you know, if you make a devil's strap out of salt, you're good to go as long as you don't screw up the, and of course, the, you know, we finally meet, or Ash finally meets Amanda Fisher.
Yep, Ruby.
No, this is he hadn't met Ruby yet. This is like the cop girl. So, yeah, she comes in trying to arrest Ash yet again.
Oh, yeah. We know that Ruby's on their trail, but they haven't officially
Because, you know, the end of this episode is kind of where her and Ruby meet, or the end of this episode, the first of the next episode. But, yeah, that's like, of course, Ash keeps trying to, like, lady, I'm trying to save the world here, but she keeps trying to arrest him, thinking he's some kind of serial killer. And, of course, she frees the demon who, you know, fucks everything up.
Oops.
And
I gotta say, man, if that was the weakest demon, I feel bad because the demon that resurrects,
it looks
like
a little baby or something.
Yeah, but I mean, once he emerges, and the thing about it too is he feeds on lesser minds. So like, you know, he just absolutely mind fucks everybody. So I think I would find somebody that doesn't have a mind fuck component behind them.
And like I said, one of the creepiest characters too, because it looks so weird because like the head kind of stays still, but the body kind of looks, it kind of like almost like a, you know, a VCR, old VCR with the tracking off. It keeps kind of just,
I mean,
skipping around and stuff.
When I saw
like,
it definitely reminded me of some of the monsters from Resident Evil. Like,
yeah.
You know, that we saw on GameCube and stuff like that, like throughout their series. So, but yeah, I was kind of creeped out. I was like, damn.
And of course, Kelly, you know, steps up and tries to come to the rescue, and beats it with the Necronomicon, smacks it. They're like, you can't read it. How are you going to use a spell? She just like smacks it with the Necronomicon and we think kills it, but really it goes into Kelly and is slowly taking over her mind.
And that now takes us to
El Brujo.
Brujo. Yes. So yeah, I thought this was a really awesome episode. Like, and the fact too that, you know, well, shit, we'll talk about further into the episode. What I was hinting at is Ash's trip that he goes on.
Oh yeah, that's something that comes up in the next couple episodes, because you know, the one information they do get from the monster before everything goes bad is that the secret to defeating it is somewhere inside Ash, which they don't really know what that means. So, you know, the last person they know that's kind of got any kind of knowledge of evil is Pablo's uncle, the Brujo. So they go on a trip to find him. And it's one of the cool things is, like I said, that whole camera chasing them thing. It's the first time they actually showed what it looks like. It was in this episode. Because in all the movies and all the previous episodes, it's always just been from the camera's point of view and people reacting to the camera. You never actually get to see what it is. And in this one, you actually see it, like, you know, in the rearview mirror or whatever. And it's just basically like a big,
like a dust cloud. Or
cloud
something.
Of dust, yeah. Chasing and just knocking cars and everything else out of the way.
But you see cars flying a couple hundred feet into the air.
Yeah.
And the fact that Ash is like, fasten your safety belts because we're about to take flight next.
Yeah, and Ash has modified the, he's got like a nitrous tank in the,
it's like, Pablo, flip that switch and hit the button.
And he just basically he's like, nearly blows
the engine. Have you tested this before? Is this safe? Not at all.
Yeah, and he's like, yeah, doing nitrous while you're towing a freaking trailer, not the best idea. And yeah, it works for like a minute, and then the engine overheats, and they almost, you know, blow up the car.
But luckily, they cross over.
Yeah, and the Brujo's property is protected. And like I said, his property is probably one of the creepiest things.
I don't know. I didn't necessarily feel it creepy. Like, I mean, I could just almost see that
all the
on
weird
some of
totems
the
made out of like doll heads and mannequin heads and stuff. It was, I mean, it like I said, it was, you know, stuff to ward off
I
evil.
Feel
but
like,
it was, it was kind
you
of
know,
freaky.
If we were to take a trip to New Orleans or somewhere like that, like you start getting into some of the Indian voodoo rituals and stuff. Like that stuff kind of intrigues me.
Yeah, like I said, at night, that place would be kind of creepy. In daylight, not that creepy. I mean, it just kind of looks weird. Like, kind of looks like, you know, if you've been to some of these weird, like, you know, Burning Man or you know, crazy art exhibits, like something you'd see at some hipster's, you know, art installation.
Welcome. We call this the Shrunken Head Den.
So, yeah. So, to help Ash, the Brujo makes him drink ayahuasca, which if you don't know what ayahuasca is, it's like South American. I've heard it's like popular in Peru. It's a plant medicine. It's basically natural LSD. I mean, you trip balls and supposedly you have these mystical visions and, you know, talk to the gods and stuff, and it, you know, the plants will heal you and stuff. But from all accounts I've ever heard of it, it is a trip. And so Ash, like, he you know, goes into his mind, which is a dark, dark place
in a way. I mean, you know, he does end up on his favorite fishing spot in Jacksonville,
off him just
talking
like,
with his gecko.
Yeah, it starts off with him just getting like attacked by monsters. So he's, and you know, he's like, Ash, this is your, you know, your dream. He's like, oh yeah, that's right. So he just starts just being a badass. And he's like, you know, what have you always done? He's like, shoot first, think later, or never. And that's kind of his motto. Which, not a bad motto to have.
I mean, we're talking about survival of all things, right?
Yep.
I mean,
and he, you know, he's like, go to your happy place, and his happy place is Jacksonville, Florida.
But I don't know. It's just cool. Like, some of these episodes where the geckos are featured, I'm thinking about going to get my geckos and just have them chill and be like, do you possess badass gecko spirit powers?
Yeah, his basically his
can one of you be my Eli?
Spirit animal is, yeah, his gecko Eli that's kind of telling him what he needs to know. And basically, like, Jacksonville is his happy place because it's basically, like, his he had a he never made it there. It was like a postcard he had. That was pretty much where he was going when they ended up at the cabin. Like, that was his plan, to, like, do the whole cabin thing, and then they were going to go to, like, Jacksonville. And then, of course, Evil Dead happened, and he never made it there. So he's, like, kind of like, you know, what would my life have been like if I just said, fuck it, I'm not going to this cabin, and just went to Jacksonville like I'd planned. And like I said, he's just sitting, you know, he's like, hey, my hand's back. I need two beers now. He's just sitting on a dock, you know, looking at this idyllic picture of, you know, the Jacksonville skyline, drinking beer and hanging out with his gecko.
I mean, I'd say that's a hell of a life, my friend. A hell of a life.
Oh, yeah. I don't know. Have you been to Jacksonville?
It's been a while.
I don't think it's as idyllic as I mean, Ash imagined.
I don't know. I mean, you're on a pier on the ocean. I mean, how bad can it be? Just saying.
Down there, it's meth heads instead of deadites he's got to worry about.
Yeah, maybe.
I think that's what's going to be in season two. He finally makes it to Jacksonville. It's going to be nothing like he expected. It's going to be like, you know, he's going to end up in the hood or something.
I don't know, man. Like,
or it is going to be how he imagines. He's going to be in a beach with a bunch of bikini girls, and they're going to turn to freaking deadites on him.
Oops. Yeah, so I don't know. That was a fun episode. I don't know. I really enjoyed the whole trip. Kind of gave me like a throwback to Beavis and Butthead, you know, when they go on their little trip, when they meet their parents and stuff. So I don't know. It was cool. I thought it was a fun episode.
Look, well, the fun part was like at the end of it too, where Kelly, who's now possessed, is trying to, you know, mess with Ash's vision, and he's like, you know, this is my vision. So he's like getting all like Jedi power and like force choking her. And like, you know, they come in and he's like choking the shit out of her. So they think he is possessed.
Yeah.
And instead of her. So, you know, they're trying to
basically, you know, beat the shit out of Ash to protect Kelly.
Yeah. And, you know, exorcise the demon inside, you know, and he's going to, you know, it's funny because he's like, because, you know, he's got Ash like all tied up and he's like, you know, putting like the magic charms in his face. And Ash is just looking at him like, wow, you know, demons usually, you know, react harder to this, and you know, because they got his mouth gagged, so he can't say anything. And he's like trying to tell him, like, I'm not freaking possessed. It's like, she's possessed. Yeah, you know, he finally, like, you know, gets the gag off and tells him. But yeah, it's funny because he's throwing all like holy water on him and all these like charms and stuff. And Ash is like not reacting. He's like, man, this demon's like really got a hold of him because it's not none of this stuff is working. And the whole time, Pablo is, you know, getting seduced by Demon Kelly, who was using Ash's boomstick as a bomb.
And what was that demon? Elegus? Elegus, I think.
Elegus? Yeah, something like that. Something I can't remember.
But yeah, so I don't know. That now brings us to halfway through this series.
But also the highlight of this episode was Ash's new hand.
Oh, yeah, where Pablo, you know, conjures up an updated one. It's like, hey, Kelly, let's do something constructive.
And yeah, and he, like, brings out this box, and it's like there's a freaking Power Glove in it, like the old Nintendo Power Glove. And she's like, I'm not really in the mood to play video games. Like, no, we're going to use this to make Ash a new hand. And the hand is, like, badass. It's got, like, freaking, like, screwdrivers and like, you know, laser pointers and flashlights. And it's, like, you know, made out of, like, you know, bike chains nearly for the joints and stuff, so... Yeah, it's kind of reminiscent of his metal hand from Army of Darkness, but yeah, his new hand, because he loses his wooden hand when they're in the library fight, because the cop tries to handcuff him to a wall, and he just, like, you know, unhooks his hand and takes off. But yeah, like, the new robot hand is pretty badass.
Yeah, that was a good episode. I enjoyed that thoroughly. And the next one was kind of interesting, too.
Yes, where kind of Pablo starts to get, you know, learn to be a badass.
Well, not only that, but then, you know, we start getting more exposure into Amanda and Ruby, and
yeah, cause they've
the fact
teamed
that
up
they're
now.
Tracking, you know, Ash using his severed undead hand is pretty awesome.
Evil GPS. I like to just put it on the dash, and it kind of points the direction to where Ash is. Because, I mean, yeah, his hand has, like, always been a pain in the ass. I love that they brought back the hand. I mean, there's so many little references to the original movies, and the hand is, like, a big part.
Yes.
Because, I mean, from Evil Dead 2, that fight scene with Ash versus his hand is hysterical. It's, like, grabbing plates and hitting him in the head and stuff.
Yeah, well, I mean, you got a possessed hand. What are you going to do? You got to off that bastard.
You ever seen the movie Idle Hands?
Yes.
That's what it reminds me of.
Holy crap, that is a throwback. I haven't seen that movie in years.
Oh, yeah. Seth Green, Jessica Alba. Oh.
Man, that was a long time ago.
Yeah. But, of course, the Brujo gets killed, and, you know, they... But that whole, like, funeral scene where they're burning him in, like, a traditional Native American kind of ceremony. And as they're leaving, like, all his totems start catching on fire, too. I thought that was kind of cool. Like, you know, as he's leaving, like, all his protection stuff is kind of leaving as well.
I'm trying to remember. Like, I remember all of that stuff erupting, and I'm like, that's not good. Like...
Yeah, like... You know, as Pablo's walking back to the car, like everything just starts kind of, you know, igniting.
But yeah, so I don't know. I think, you know, this episode, this is one really where Kelly tries to seduce Pablo and, you know, ultimately kill him. Which I don't know, man. At this point, like, Pablo's been turned down left and right. Like he should at this point have realized that I am in the friend zone forever. Like.
Yeah, when she started trying to hit on me, she should have known she was possessed at that point. Like, but...
Kelly is persona non nookie.
Yeah, she's like, you're like my brother. He's like, oh, that's like the kiss of death right there. Like, you hate to hear that from a girl. You're sweet. I mean, yeah, that's something you never want to hear.
Yeah, and I think it's cool, too, because, you know, this is also where Pablo gets the medallion from his uncle. And later on, that becomes, you know, more, I guess, prominent in the later episodes.
Yeah, I'm not sure how that's going to play out, because it kind of has, like, an attraction to the book. So, I don't know if it's going to be help him or hurt him as the series goes on.
Maybe it's like a locket, you know? Maybe it just needs to absorb the book's power somehow, and you just close it up. And, you know, maybe that's how, you know... Season 2 wraps up. They contain it inside the locket, and then Ash ends up giving the locket to another one of his hotties or his flings.
Yeah,
she
opens
it up.
Yeah, that's how it's
and then
work.
That's how season 3 picks up.
I gotta say, like, the effects in this too. The Deadites look like Deadites. I mean, it's they're not, you know, the makeup effects while being
that's
newer.
Crazy to see what, you know, original Evil Dead versus, you know, fast forward a couple decades to today.
Yeah, because even like the remake of Evil Dead, those Deadites looked more horrific. These Deadites look like original Evil Dead Deadites. You know, the makeup's a little bit smoother, but other than that, I mean, they look like they should look.
So now we're led to episode 6, The Killer of Killers.
And the thing, one of the things Ash finds out in his dream is his he's supposed to go back to where it all started. That's where he can seal the book. He's supposed to bury it where his journey started. So now they're kind of on the quest to return to the cabin. And at this point, like I said, Amanda's still kind of tracking them now. Oh, and Ruby's character. So we kind of start to realize she ain't who she says she is because she gets attacked by Deadite Brujo and supposedly killed. But she is burned up, but somehow she miraculously heals later on. So you're like, oh, she ain't exactly who she says she is. But, you know, Amanda continues on her quest to find Ash, and they eventually come across each other in this on a roadside restaurant, and you know the evil catches up with him and turns everybody into Deadites, and you get another badass fight scene in the middle.
I love you know, as the waitress walks to, or Ash is trying to close out his tab after realizing that nobody at the table has money, and after he's told, you know, both freaking Pablo and Kelly that, you know, oh, don't worry about the tab, I got this. anyway, he's.
His plan is to seduce the waitress. Yeah.
And, like, she's like, well, one thing, that's my husband. He's the chef. And He's a badass looking motherfucker. Yeah. Like,
he's like, and that doesn't even slow Ash down. He's like, it's all right. Well, then, you know, just, we got to be quiet about this so he doesn't come. You can just meet me in the bathroom in a couple minutes.
And he goes in there and, you know, basically washes his balls in the sink, I guess, increasing the chances for a blowjob. But it all goes south from there.
Yeah, because Amanda shows up and tries to arrest him again.
Poor kid in the stall trying to take a crap. Like,
yeah.
Has all this banging, demonic possession, and everything else is happening around him. Like, you know, that's got to not be the best.
Yeah, that's definitely.
I don't know. That's not bladder shy. That's a whole different shy.
Yeah, well, there's a whole fight going on outside the bathroom. That's that makes it hard to finish your business.
But yeah, I like the fact too that, you know, we also see that Ash's hand has disappeared in this episode, and we get introduced to Lim, the old militia friend of Ash, who just kind of seems like batshit crazy, like somebody I would see like suffering from extreme PTSD, like that been through Vietnam and seen some like really horrible shit.
Yeah, that's like I said, and of course, if he's crazy, or he knows Ash, he's definitely crazy. But yeah, Ash is trying to wanting to arm up for the battle ahead. So he, yeah, has plans to go check out Lim's militia and stock up on some armory. And you know, Amanda finally realized that Ash isn't the evil one that she's been chasing. That you know, he's actually trying to stop this, and you know, she decides to join the quest. And yeah, of course,
and that's not before, you know, the freaking, you know, police chief, the waitress, and, you know, eventually Lim, you know, all end up, you know, getting killed in this diner.
Yeah, except Lim gets away but gets possessed and tries to go back to his militia. So when Ash and them show up, the militia is like, you know, trying to fight deadites.
Yeah.
And since they're a paranoid militia, they think Ash is from the government and lock him in a bunker with possessed Lim, him and Amanda, who are handcuffed together and has to fight a gas spewing Lim. Yeah. Which is kind of cool because those two together, they just kind of immediately like key up and are able to like kick ass, you know, kind of in unison. Like it's like Ash has met his match at this point.
Which I think of as a fitting title for this episode, Fire in the Hole.
True that. And the whole fight scene with, you know, while they're trapped in the bunker, Kelly and Pablo are kind of running from the militia, and they end up getting into a fight with a deadite militiaman and just squishes the shit out of him. And then Pablo's like, all right, you got to put on his gas mask so we can sneak back in. And like, there's literally like the eye holes are like full of blood because they've like run over him with the truck a couple times.
Yes.
Shot the piss out of him.
Oh, I'm having a hard time remembering some of the better details of this episode.
Yeah, these two episodes, the diner episode and this episode, are kind of, I don't know, almost off track. Like they're almost like, you know, kind of one off episodes where like, all right, we got to fill some time before we get to the cabin.
Let's just show some blood and gore, give the fans what they want, and let's move on.
Yeah.
So, all right, so that we're gonna fast forward here to episode 8, Ashes to Ashes, and you know, this is really where I think Ash really becomes, and we start to see what I felt like a lot of throwback. Because yeah, this is where they return to the cabin.
Yeah,
this time Ash with his chainsaw, the shotgun, and the Necronomicon.
Yeah, it's like the last three episodes take place in the original cabin. And it looks like, I mean, they have done a good job of rebuilding the Evil Dead cabin. It looks exactly like it did in the first movies. I mean, it was, I don't know if they were using the cabin from the remake or what, but I mean, the set, it looks exactly like it did, you know, 30 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It was awe-inspiring. I was like, damn. Really gave me some throwback memories.
And like I said, he at this point has ditched his crew because He knows anybody goes to that cabin with him is probably going to die. So he tries to leave them behind and go face it, you know, himself to protect his crew. And the scene where he's walking up to the cabin and the old swing is like hitting the door just like it did when they approached in like Evil Dead. And as soon as he walks up to the door, it stops. I mean, it's exactly like how he approached the cabin in the first movie. I mean, that was like the coolest thing. I'm like, holy shit. Like, it's like we've jumped right back into Evil Dead.
Yeah. And this is, you know, all the while, you know, Kelly and Pablo have escaped into the woods. They get lost in the woods, but find a group of hitchhikers consisting of yours truly, Brad, and his fiance, and Heather. And this is where you get kind of the, hey, we just need to kill off some folks that really aren't going to be integral to the storyline whatsoever.
It's definitely slasher horror movie fodder that, like, as soon as you see three good-looking people in the woods, you know they're going to die. It's just...
And it's funny, too, because Pablo makes, you know, it's all about some Heather. And Heather's kind of digging Pablo, and all the time Kelly's like, oh, no, he has a girlfriend, yada, 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 like... You know, really, you friend zone him for this time, and it's one chance to hook up with somebody, and you're going to tell her that, you know, he's taken or something? Like, come on.
But yeah, while they're kind of stumbling around the woods trying to find the cabin, like I said, Ash is kind of wandering around the cabin on his own, and all the things from Evil Dead, the bodies from the original movie, yeah, he goes to the...
I love
shed.
When he goes to the shed, and there's Linda.
Yeah, her head is still in the vise where he chopped her up before. And, of course, Amanda finds him, and the evil hand has grown into a full evil Ash. So it's just like, kind of like evil Ash from Army of Darkness. It's like another kind of throwback to that.
Yeah, and I don't know. I love the epic, thing where, you know, Ash has kind of got a thing for, what's the officer's name? Her name's slipping my head.
Amanda.
And Linda's like, you know she's not going to make it out of here alive, right? Like, I'm right here. You can skull fuck me anytime. I'm like, damn.
Yeah, that's... Oh.
Like, I almost fell out of my seat laughing at that line.
Oh, but yeah, of course, the kids finally find the cabin, and, you know, Ash is there with evil Ash, and Amanda's dead, and, you know, he's having to fight himself yet again.
On the fucking deer antlers, of all things.
Yeah.
Like, you know, the deer antlers was a major throwback. Like, when you originally see the deer antlers fall on the floor, you're like, I know what that setup's for. Like,
yep, somebody's going to get impaled on that. It's just a matter of
time. You
know,
we didn't think, hey, we should just move this outside or do something different with it. Like, no, let's just leave it here.
But the whole thing I kept waiting for too was another tree rape scene.
Especially oh yeah, as they're running through the woods and everything. Yeah, I was waiting on it.
Oh, yeah. That, like I said, that whole, I'm like, all right. That's like the only thing they didn't like throw back to the original was like, all right, who's going to get tree raped? I figure one of those hitchhikers hikers it would have happened to.
I was going to say Heather. Yeah, you know, Heather had the bet. I mean, she was the more scantily clad, you know, tummy showing, you know, the Daisy Duke shorts and everything. Like, I figured she had it coming.
Yeah, that's the way it usually happens. Oh, and when, like, the rest of the crew finally gets, or when Amanda, after she gets killed, turns into a deadite, that scene was hilarious where she attacks Pablo and Kelly and the hitchhikers in the woods and kills two of the hitchhikers and starts using them like hand puppets.
Yes.
She just pops up like, hey, motherfuckers. Just, that's probably one of the funniest, like, I mean, it kind of goes back to like the original, you know, our Evil Dead 2 deadites that are like, just like freaking are crazy and, you know.
I mean, just fucking
give them
you.
A bunch of shit. Yeah. Yeah. But she's like using those as like hand puppets. It's it's so messed up.
But yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed this episode. I mean, it had a lot of good humor, but then it also set the stage very much for some of the later episodes.
And then this is where Ruby finally joins the group and saves them from evil Amanda and is still claiming to be daughter of Professor Nobi. And, you know, supposedly she's like, all right, you know, tries to tell Ash how to end it all. He has to cut the face of the book off and give her the book so she can, you know, stop everything. But it's really a trap because she is the dark ones or the people who actually made the book.
Yeah. Yeah. She's one of the original dark ones. And is this the fact we wind real quick, the Ashes to Ashes episode, is that the one where basically she kills Imposter Ash, or is this, I confuse the two episodes. I don't remember which but I thought that was interesting. Like, you know, basically.
Well, no, Kelly or Pablo one ends up killing Evil Ash because they're both fighting and they've got the boomstick on them and, you know, they're both trying to convince them that the other one is the evil one. And then finally Ash is like, all right, you're just going to kill us both. So then they kill the other one. She's like, how'd you know? He's like, freaking Ash want to take the easy way out? I mean, that's definitely like, you know, so Ash. That's like, it had to be you.
Because I thought that line was great. So I just thought that was worth mentioning. All right, so now continue.
Yeah, because like the last three episodes kind of all blend together because they're all take place in the cabin.
Well, it starts like the, hey, we're going to get introduced to the cabin, so here's the tour. Then it starts in the interior of the cabin on the upstairs, and then it migrates to the basement.
Yeah,
so you get multiple levels of the cabin.
Yeah, and there's so many little like flashbacks where it's showing scenes from the original Evil Dead, and you see the aftermath of the stuff that happened in Evil Dead, like, you know, the bodies from the people that were, you know, originally killed. And like I said, those three episodes, I think, was like really the gift to the fans. Like, you know, this brought it back to the original, because without being in the cabin, it doesn't really wholly feel like an Evil Dead sequel until this point.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, like we touched on, you know, there were, you know, subtle one-liners. There was, you know, a little bit of mention, but really these episodes here, I mean, this is really where you get the flashbacks. And like you said, this is really what brought everything full circle for me.
Yeah. And, you know, once we found out that Ruby is actually evil, the severed face of the book possesses Pablo. And that's probably one of the creepiest makeup effects in the episode.
Yeah, dude, I very much...
Evil,
you know,
Pablo with the leather face Necronomicon mask.
I very much felt like that was almost like a throwback to Texas Chainsaw Massacre, the leather face, like the dead skin mask, like,
oh yeah, all he looks so creepy.
That's what I had in my mind. Like Gunnar Henson's original character, when you see him in the dead skin mask, like, this is a Mexican version.
El Leatherfaceo. Oh, leather cabasa, or however you say face in Spanish. But yeah, and you know, Ruby is trying to summon all these demons from the book and releases these creepy ass dead kids.
Yeah, and hold on. We just need to stop right there, because this episode really put it in perspective. Like, a lot of people question, how could a man ever give birth? This episode showed it in its entirety.
Yeah, she's using Pablo as like the doorway to the book, and he's basically vomiting up demon babies. And it's disgusting.
Yes.
And the, like I said, creepy children in horror movies like creep me out more than monsters, and these little monster kids were like just freaking...
Yeah, I mean, with their hollowed eyes.
Yeah.
I just...
Like, Ash even tries to, like, you know, do the whole Three Stooges and poke him in the eyes at one point, and like, they don't have eyes, they're just like hollow sockets, and he just gets this black goo when he pulls his hand, he's like, ugh. And when I'm like, bites him in the nuts or something. Yes. It's like, he's fighting these kids.
Over there, like, chewing on his leg.
But yeah, and out of all the stuff that happened, the way this season kind of wrapped up with, you know, Ash finally gets the drop on Ruby, and she's like, you know, or at first she tries to go into his mind and kind of offer him, you know, a truce. Yeah, he's like, here, you know, go to Jacksonville. And he's like, nope, not going to do it. And then he finally gets to the point where he's got, you know, the chainsaw to her neck. And, you know, he can end it. But, you know, if he kills her, Pablo's probably going to die. You know, Kelly's probably going to die. All right, let's back it up for a second. Kelly versus the cabin. When Ash is in the basement fighting Ruby, Kelly is literally having to fight the cabin, and it's kind of hilarious. Especially
that's
when, like,
how we see Heather's death, because
she gets eaten
burned
by the cabin.
Yeah,
But yeah, when the doors open and that like tidal wave of blood just like washes her out of the house, that is definitely an Evil Dead move.
Washed away by tidal wave blood.
And then she's like, all right, I'm just going to burn you down if you won't let me in. The cam's like, all right, I'll let you in. Yeah. Oh, but yeah. Ash is like, you know, I could kill her, but all my friends would be dead and I'd be alone again. He's like, fuck it, I am going to take the easy way out. Because she's like, Ruby's like, yes, I'm summoning all this evil, but I don't want humanity to die. You know, humanity's got you without, you know, good, there can't be evil. So I just want to control all the evil. I want to be like the godfather of evil. You know, I don't want to destroy the world. I just want to be in control of all the evil. You know, if you let me go, you can go to Jacksonville with your friends. I will spare all y'all. And like I said, and Ash is like, all right, I'll take the deal. That's like, but I'm keeping the knife just in case the whatever, Kondarian blade, the one thing that can kill the deadites. He's like, yes. I'm taking this with me just in case you go back on the bargain. And I'm like, this has got to be a ploy. I'm waiting for him to, like, you know, chop her head off or something. But no, Ash is like, nope, fuck this.
We're out.
And they're in the back going, was that the best idea? He's like, don't care. Going to Jacksonville.
All around them, like, these big sinkholes are emerging. You're hearing on the radio, like, you know, state of alerts.
And he's like, ah, that happens all the time. It's not necessarily because of you. He only puts on, like, some, you know, classic rock and roll and drive off into the sunset.
You know, and that's one thing that we didn't touch on, is I got to say, the, you know, soundtrack to each of these episodes were just absolutely awesome. I love the old classic rock, you know, Phil and everything. Like, I mean, it just... I don't know. I want a CD to this season.
Yeah, like it definitely had a cool like classic rock feel. Kind of almost remind me of Supernatural.
Yeah,
like yeah, driving in the car playing classic rock and roll. I mean, it's like almost had like a very Supernatural feel to it. And like I said, well, you know, Ash couldn't really end evil since we got a season two out of it, but I think it would have been better story to have him kill Ruby and be the hero, and then them spend the second season trying to hunt down the evil kids and whatever mischief they're causing in the world. But
yeah, I mean, that was the only thing that didn't quite feel right with me, was the ending to this. Like all throughout the episodes in this season, or series, whatever we want to call it, you know, there was kind of the same feel to it, you know, it had the, but the ending just didn't add up for me. Like I was a little bit disappointed.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen Ash in the past.
I expected try to, so much more.
Like, you know, with like Army of Darkness, we've seen, you know, Ash kind of try to take the easy way out and then feel bad about it and eventually, you know, become the hero. But yeah, this one is kind of a letdown. Like I said, I would have much rather seen him, you know, finish off Ruby and then have to spend season two tracking down the stuff that she released from the book. But, hey, we get a season two, so maybe he'll go to Jacksonville, you know, drink some beers and then start to feel bad because, you know, the world's going to shit and he has to finish what he started.
Absolutely. So, yeah, I'm curious to see what it has in store. I mean, you know, the rest of the season kept me enthralled. It was everything that I could have hoped for as a, you know, fan of the Evil Dead franchise. So
as we wrap this up, what's probably, say, a highlight for you from that? What's your favorite part of this season?
I don't know, man. There were quite a few. The one line of, you know, Linda, you know, requesting to be skull fucked. I mean, that was a definite highlight, but I mean, then the over-the-top tidal wave of blood was another one, and then the whole puppet scene. I mean, like, I don't know. There were several. I don't think I have one that just jumped out at me as...
I think for me, my favorite part of the season was, you know, the end of episode one, where you see Ash going from the kind of like the bumbling loser to the hero again that we know. You know, once he breaks out the chainsaw hand and the boomstick and puts on the blue shirt, I'm like, and then says groovy, I'm like, this is it. I'm on for the ride at this point. And then, like I said, the final couple episodes where they're back at the cabin and there's all the references to, the original Evil Dead flashbacks.
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of nostalgia, and you know, I gotta say, all except for the ending, like the rest of the series, I mean, it very much felt like Evil Dead. I don't think I could have asked of anything more or anything different outside of the ending to the first season.
Yeah. So, as we wrap up, what's your final thoughts on this cigar?
This cigar has stayed, you know, very much, I'm going to say more medium to me than full. You know, woody, creamy. It's been an enjoyable smoke. I can't say that it is one really stood out to me to be super duper great. I mean, it was kind of generic. I mean, for the price range that we paid, this would be a good kind of everyday go-to smoke if you want to stay in the $8, $9 range versus more the $12 to $15 range. But, I mean, I don't necessarily have anything negative to say about it, but it's not, you know, something that makes such an impression that a year from now I'm going to be like, oh, I should go and smoke this cigar from now.
Yeah, I like the coffee and cocoa with the bourbon taste. Overall, the construction of the cigar was pretty good. I mean, at least the first two-thirds of it, you know, held together real well. I'm kind of getting some unraveling now as I get toward the end, but, you know, it may be, mine might have been a little dry because, you know, you bought yours tonight and I bought mine like a day or two ago. So, you know, even though it was in my travel humidor, it may have dried out a little bit during storage. But, you know, because the one I had fresh from the shop, like, it held up real well, and it, like I said, it was a good smoke. So I think the one I'm smoking tonight just kind of dried up a little bit on me. Time to, you know, rehydrate the humidor.
Yeah, I mean, as far as my cigar, I mean, it definitely maintained a consistent and even burn. You know, there was only one time that I found myself having to relight. The draw of the cigar was, you know, very smooth. It didn't take a whole lot of effort, so... You know, as far as the construction and everything else goes, and the aroma of the cigar, I mean, those are all, you know, top-notch things for me. Just the flavor profile wasn't quite as complex and as enjoyable as some of the other cigars that we've smoked for me.
Yeah, it may not be a, like I said, an outstanding cigar, but it's a good cigar. It's definitely one, you know, you could, you know,
and especially for this price point. I mean, this is definitely a good premium cigar at the $8, $9 price range. So, you know, you can't necessarily go wrong with it.
Yep. And with that, we'll be right back.
Stay tuned.
Hey man, it's almost that time.
What time is it?
Beer 30.
The Booze Hounds return.
And welcome back. It's Beer 30.
Yeah, it's my first recovery beer. And today we are doing the Sweetwater. It's a Dank Tank compilation. This is the Bacon Smoked Porter.
I'm
sorry. Yeah, the pulled porter.
Yeah, the Dank Tank is Sweetwater's like limited release yearly beer. So this is this year's beer. It's a bacon smoked porter.
Yeah, and I got to say, this is kind of interesting. You know, there's a whole backstory here, but I thought one of the cool things was, you know, Sweetwater teaming up with, you know, Fox Barbecue, right?
Yep, Fox Brothers Barbecue.
Yeah. always forget the brothers for some reason. But, you know, basically they took their malt and put it into Fox Brothers smoker and, you know, smoked it for 3 days. So,
yeah, and then also threw bacon in to infuse the malts with a bacon flavor. Yeah, it was they smoked 1 ton of malt on their wood-burning smokers using nothing but hickory. Each batch of malt was smoked for 5 hours.
Yeah, and you definitely pick up on the hickory. You know, I'm a barbecue enthusiast. You know, in the warmer months, I love to be outside, you know, with the smoker and everything. For just a sit-down beer, this is not my favorite. You know, you definitely have the smokiness. You have, you know, the woody notes, the aroma. Then you have, you know, just a touch of the bacon flavor coming through.
Yeah, and you can kind of smell that sweet hickory to it. But yeah, you're not getting as much of the bacon, or at least I'm not picking it up yet. Maybe it warms up a little. It'll be more prominent. But I gotta say, out of the other bacon porters I've had, it compared to other bacon porters, it is pretty good. It may not be.
Well, like I mean, it's, you know, like you've got the Voodoo, the bacon maple syrup beer. You've got a couple of other bacons. This beer, I think, would be a warmer month beer, and I want to be outside when I'm drinking this beer.
And some of the smoked porters I've had have tasted like freaking straight-up charcoal. And like I said, this one does not have that overpowering smoky flavor. It's a good balance, because I've had, I think it was like Red Hair had a bacon maple porter, and it, like I said, it just tasted like somebody scooped up ashes from the from the bottom of the smoker and poured in a beer glass. But this one's not bad.
Yeah, I mean, it's just not, when I sit down to relax with the beer, this isn't going to be the first one I grab. Now, in the right environment, if I'm outside by my smoker, it's warm.
Enjoying some Fox Brothers barbecue with it.
Exactly. Like, I feel like if I had a plate of barbecue in front of me, this is probably the beer I want. Because, you know, usually when I smoke my foods, I use some of the milder fruit woods, things of that nature, depending on what I'm doing. So hickory typically has a heavier, more, you know, thicker smoke, and the taste of hickory really comes through. So I think paired with, you know, especially something that maybe had a little bit of a spicy barbecue sauce, something to add a little bit of twang, I think this beer would complement very, very well.
Yeah, adding some pepper to this would probably be pretty good.
That, or maybe even, I don't know, kind of sounds weird, but, you know, barbecue and pickles always goes well. So, you know, maybe a pickle or two. You know, hey, who knows, you know?
Dip your pickle in it.
I mean, you know, you got to try different things, right? That's how great beer was established. If we always just did the same thing with beer, we would never have all these great craft beers that we do. So,
true.
You know, as Sweetwater says, don't float the mainstream. Sometimes you got to add a little pickle. I mean, yeah. And dude, we got dill pickle chips and everything else, so why not?
I gotta say, the bottle too is kind of, it cracks me up. It's a, I guess, a chef riding a pig is the best way to describe it.
You're essentially trying to lasso the pig. And I like the whole backstory too. I mean, there's a two paragraph backstory.
The farmer got drunk and accidentally threw his pig in the brew kettle.
You know, and I like the ending. Slap a thigh and ride the wave.
Oh, yeah. This is, like I said, this is a weird beer, but it's not bad.
Yeah, I don't know. I think I'm at about a 3.5 on the untapped score on this one.
Yeah, it's probably a good spot to,
I don't know, clean. And once again, I'll reiterate, I've been sick for the last couple of days, so, you know, I may not be in the best condition to be judging or rating a beer right now, but I'm holding it down. It hasn't come back up, so we'll consider it a win.
But as it warms up a little, and like I said, you know, my cigar went out, so I don't have that smoke with it, so now that I'm getting like a fresh taste of it, I'm definitely tasting more of that barbecue flavoring to it. So I don't know, I might give it like a 3.75. I'll try it again. Especially I'd like to try with a big plate of ribs.
Yes, absolutely. I think that's just an excuse for you to be like, hey, Brad, why don't you smoke some ribs and let's try that beer again.
Exactly. All right. With that, we'll be right back.
Stay tuned.
Hello, Marvel Universe. The Earth Station MCU podcast is your home for all things related to the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Join our debrief as we discuss Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Agent Carter, upcoming and past favorite Marvel movies, cosplay, comics history, toys, games, interviews, and all things MCU. Whether you're a hero or a villain, a new viewer, or have been reading comics since you were a kid, there's something for you on Earth Station MCU.
And we're back for science. You ready to learn some shit, Brad?
Absolutely. What the fuck are you going to educate me about this time?
Well, let's start with some drone news. You know, we're all scared of the drones, like, you know, attacking us from the sky. But now, just when you thought it was safe to go back into the water, we have an amphibious drone that can follow you into the water.
What the hell?
Yep. It's they're calling it the Loon, kind of named after a amphibious bird that can fly and swim pretty well. Dr. Osama Rawashtin and Sean Simpson of Oakland University Embedded Systems Research Lab has developed a amphibious drone. Basically, there's a drone competition called Drones for Good in the whatever United Arab Emirates. But basically, teams, you know, develop drones for this competition that are supposed to have a effect on humanity or whatever, and which has a $1 million top prize. And so far, the Loon is one of the finalists for this prize. And basically, it's, like I said, it looks like your standard quadcopter, you know, drone like you buy at any store. But what makes this one different is it's equally as effective underwater. Like I said, it will fly, and then it can land, you know, in water and kind of scoot around like a boat. But then it can also sink below the water and then become a remote control submarine.
And I'm reading this correctly? Like, it actually can be set up to shoot nets to capture other drones?
No, that was just some of the examples of drones that are being developed for the competition. And, you know, this one is just an amphibious drone. It does not shoot anything. Or at least not yet, until Skynet takes over.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I'm just wondering, you know, how much my, you know, prepper radar should be going off.
Yeah, I mean, this thing, it's kind of cool, because in the video they show it, you know, lands in a pool, and then, like I said, it sinks below the surface, and then the propellers propel it around the pool like a, you know, like an underwater submarine. And then, you know, when you're done seeing what's under the water, you know, it just goes back up to the surface and launches back into the air just like a standard drone would.
I mean, I could see this, you know, being a huge thing, you know, for surfers, things of that nature, people looking to really capture, you know, some of those more extreme videos. I mean, this would get you from all angles, you know?
Yeah, and if you're like, you know,
I mean,
crashing into the water, it's all good.
Well, I mean, and I'm wondering, like, from a life-saving device, right? Like, if you could track this, like, if you can find where a down surfer is or something of that nature. Or
one of the things they've said that you know, potential uses for it is like studying whales and sharks, because it's easier to spot them from the air, and then you could, you know, land it in the water and then film them, you know, under the water and then return, you know, to land that without having to actually go in to recover it. But yeah, it's like I said, it's, you know, or even probably, like, you know, search and rescue and stuff. Like I said, it can search and
locate
targets. Yeah,
I mean, let's
say
there's a down ship or something. If you're able to, you know,
from the air and then,
you know, some type of sonar or something of that nature. I mean, yeah, I don't know. I could see this really having a lot of different uses. You know, kind of a little bit of a red flag for Drones for Good competition. Like, that just, like, where's the Drones for Evil competition? Where's that being coasted?
That's at a secret undisclosed location, probably in a hollowed out volcano with a Bond villain.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, just kind of makes you wonder.
Sharks with freaking lasers on their head.
Just remain on condition yellow, folks.
Oh, and in other news, I'm not going to say it's aliens, but it's probably aliens. With the release of the return of the X-Files, the CIA has, on their blog, which is kind of weird that the CIA has a blog, they've released several unclassified UFO documents from the 40s and 50s, documenting several cases that you can actually go onto their website and read about, actual UFO encounters. And it's kind of cool because they even broke the stories up into, they've got the top five CIA documents that Mulder would love, which basically are, eyewitness reports and investigations on flying saucers. There's a flying saucer report over East Germany from 1952, minutes of branch chief meeting on UFOs, August 11th, 1952, flying saucers reported over Spain and North Africa in 1952, survey of flying saucer reports from August of 1952, and flying saucers reported over Belgian Congo uranium mines in 1952. And then they have the top five CIA documents Scully would love to get, which are more of the debunking of some of these sightings and actual scientific investigations on some of these sightings. It has the scientific advisory panel on unidentified flying objects from January 1953, office memorandum on flying saucers March 1949, memorandum to CIA director on flying saucers, meeting of the OSI advisory group on UFOs, and memorandum for the record on flying saucers from December 1952. So these are these things have been, I guess, declassified for a while now. But it's kind of cool that they're the CIA has a sense of humor. And it's like, hey, you guys like the X-Files? Hey, check out this X-Files stuff we have.
Yeah, and looking over some of these reports and things of that nature, I mean, it's really interesting. I don't know. Some of them still have some blacked out areas. It kind of makes you wonder. I think that kind of goes along with, the updated season of the X-Files, because it's now almost become like a government conspiracy, more so than the outer space aliens. So is this just a plot by the CIA that, oh shit, the X-Files are really on to us and we need to distract the general public? So here's a whole bunch of shit on UFOs and aliens.
Which is kind of cool because there's also a link in the article on how to investigate flying saucers if you truly want to believe. And they give you their top 10 suggestions on how to conduct UFO investigations. The article kind of goes into the Zamora sighting, which was... I read about this sighting before. It was basically a police officer who, saw this, ship land while he was on patrol, and, it took off, and he thought he was crazy until he saw, imprints and stuff. And it's been a case that was, well documented and investigated because it was witnessed by law enforcement officers, but it's never actually been, solved. And it goes kind of into the Operation Blue Book, if you've ever heard that, which was, a group set up by the government to investigate UFO sightings and figure out what they are. And out of 1,218 investigations they did during Project Blue Book that went from 1947 to 1969, out of all those, there's still 701 cases that are still listed as unidentified, where they never did come up with a lot of them turned out to be weather phenomenon, military aircraft, stuff like that, or just freaking batshit crazy people.
But or that's just what they want you to believe.
700 that they're like, yeah, we don't know what the hell that is.
Yeah, and I mean, these are... Do you want to go into the 10 reasons?
Yeah, number one, establish a group to investigate and evaluate. Which, you know, as we...
I think that just adds credibility. Yeah. Right? Without understanding.
We've talked about ghost hunting and stuff, and it's always more credible when you have multiple eyes looking at a problem than just one crazy nut in his basement like we are. Two, determine objectives for your investigation. I mean, yeah, you always got to have...
a goal or, you know...
some kind of, you know, set... methodology. And the objectives for Project Blue Book was to determine if UFO phenomena present a threat to the security of the U.S., to determine if UFO phenomena exhibit any technological advances which could be channeled into U.S. research and development, and to explain or identify the stimuli which caused the observer to report a UFO. And then number three is consult with experts. Yeah, which... that probably goes without saying. You know, if you get somebody to, what you or I may think is, you know, unidentified, someone who actually, you know, is an expert on aircraft or weather, maybe like, no, that's just, you know, ball
weather balloons or whatever the case is.
Yeah, whatever. Number four was create a reporting system. So yeah, you know, it's, you know, if you document something the same way every time, it's, you know, add some credibility. Eliminate false positives. Like I said, confirm whether or not that this is some secret freaking military aircraft or, you know, or just a regular military aircraft that your drunk buddies thought was a UFO.
Or in today's case, drones.
Yeah. Develop methodology to ID common aircraft and other aerial phenomenon often mistaken for UFOs. Examine witness documents. Conduct controlled experiments. Because, you know, like I said, sometimes if they say, oh, that was a weather phenomenon, if you can recreate that, like, oh, yeah, that's not a UFO. That's the... flight from Atlanta to Vegas that passes over every day at 7 o'clock, and the sun just happened to hit it right. Gather and test physical forensics evidence, and discourage false reporting. Yeah, because you know, you don't want to get a bunch of crazy people. Yeah, so, yeah, it's you know, hard to determine real reports from fake reports.
I want to get on the 5 o'clock news.
Yeah, when you get a whole bunch of crazy people sending you bullshit reports.
Yeah, so I don't know. Kind of interesting.
Yeah, I think it's good. I mean, it's awfully cool of the CIA to post such an entertaining article.
Well, I mean, you know, we've seen, you know, other facets of the government, the CDC doing their zombie survival outbreak guidelines and stuff. So, I mean, I think it's very much a media ploy, but it's also, I don't know, I think it's awesome to see some of the facets of pop culture and, you know, the release of the X-Files and the CIA trying to piggyback off of some of the stuff. So.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be so serious all the time.
It's not all terrorists and spying. Sometimes they talk about UFOs. And speaking of possible unexplained things, we may have a new planet in the solar system.
And that's what it sounds like, folks.
Yeah, scientists have... they've not actually detected a new planet in the solar system yet, but there's several mathematical models of how different space debris moves and how other planets are you know, affected by gravity fields and whatnot. So theoretically, from these, you know, other evidence we're seeing, they think there is another planet kind of in the outer edge of our solar system that would explain the, you know, path of some of these meteors, space debris, whatnot, because like I said, you know, the gravity of one planet affects other things in the surrounding area and whatnot. So according to these mathematical models, that there is possibly another planet to replace Pluto since it got demoted.
Damn it. Yeah. I'm really curious to see how this plays out. I always love, you know, astronomy. I don't know, something about the, I guess it just, we see so little of the universe and we get so wrapped up in our minute lives, you know, on the grand scheme of things. And, you know, it's crazy to see what's going on around us and the things that we haven't even fathomed could be occurring.
Yeah, and, you know, so far they're just calling it, well, originally they called it Planet X, now they're calling it, you know, Planet 9, which I'm pretty sure both of those have been titles for old sci-fi horror movies. So, yeah, it's... they may want to come up with a better name because, you know, aliens from Planet 9, I think, has already been established as a bad thing.
Yeah, I don't know. It would be nice. I mean, I grew up all of my childhood, you know, there were 9 planets in the solar system. Like, it's hard to unlearn that knowledge. So this science segment is teaching me to unlearn knowledge that I previously learned. So I have ruled out the, you know, the false reports.
All right, and with that, we'll be right back.
Stay tuned.
And now it's time for all things nerdy in Nerd News.
And welcome to Nerd News, folks. So we'll just go ahead, jump into it, get started. A little bit of Star Wars news. Episode 8 now has a new release date. Originally, it was scheduled to be released May 25th for some rewrites and other things. However, now it has been moved to December 15th of 2017.
Yeah, maybe they decided to rewrite some things and make Kylo Ren less of a bitch.
Maybe. I don't know. Although the emo Kylo Ren stuff has been awesome.
I saw a picture today that was one of those toy Kylo Ren lightsabers stuck through a Solo cup.
Yeah. I don't know. It would have been interesting, you know, to Star Wars Episode 8 original release date would have come out 3 weeks after the release of Marvel's Guardian of the Galaxy 2, another Disney property. So I'm wondering if they wanted to minimize competition between the two films, because those are going to be both huge blockbusters.
Yeah, there's definitely be some competition for screen space with both of those coming out at the same time.
Yeah,
but I've also heard they're, like I said, they've decided to do some rewriting on the script and change some things based on reactions to episode 7. So,
absolutely, who knows?
Maybe we'll get some Boba Fett.
Yeah, we'll see where it goes. All is not lost for the May 25th date, however, because Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Men Tell No Tales is set to release on that date now. So, I don't know. I've always been a fan of the Pirates of the Caribbean films, so I don't know. I'd maybe not wait to see it in theater, but I will see it at some point.
I've not seen any information on the new Pirates movie, so I have no idea what it's about.
Better specify Pirates of the Caribbean. So switching gears a little bit, however, still kind of sticking within comic book. Did you happen to catch the new trailer for Suicide Squad?
Hell yes, with freaking Queen.
Yes. Yeah, the Bohemian Rhapsody, you know, as the backing track throughout the film. I got to say, I am absolutely looking forward to seeing this film. Much, much more than I would ever be interested in seeing Batman vs. Superman.
Yeah, of all the upcoming DC stuff, that's about the only one that I'm actually excited to see, because it looks pretty badass. And with that that soundtrack, the trailer made a perfect like music video for that.
Yeah, and I don't know, you know, I'm really curious to see Will Smith back in the game. You know, Harley Quinn just looks absolutely psychotic and crazy, as what you would expect out of Harley. And, you know, freaking Crocodile. I mean, the makeup or the special effects going on there looks awesome. And then, I don't know, I'm just really curious to see, you know, how the film plays out and everything. But right now, it looks like it's going to be a blast.
Yeah, Killer Croc looks pretty, I was like, how are they going to do that, you know, on a live-action version? But they've not shied away from having Killer Croc look like a Killer Croc.
Yeah, I mean, definitely got the kind of the scaly skin, everything else going on. Like, so very much that reptilian feel. So, I don't know. I mean, I'm ecstatic. I think it's going to be a blast. One of the cool things that I saw was, you know, Kevin Smith actually acquired the bat from Suicide Squad and ended up giving it to his daughter. And
apparently, he hosted some like Suicide Squad special or something that was on TV the other day, and they gave him the bat as kind of thanks for hosting that for him. And that's pretty cool that he's got the actual.
Well, did you see what he did with it, though?
Yeah, he gave it to his Harley Quinn.
Yeah, and like her emotional response and everything was just awesome. I mean, it's, you know, I think that's one of the things that I love so much about kind of the geek culture, fandoms in general, things of, you know, just the mass appeal. I mean, something from a comic book character, but, you know, how it can have that personal impact, inspire, motivate, you know, have emotional impacts, things of that nature. So I don't know. I mean, to me, I think that's what, you know, this podcast and just all fandoms are is, you know, do what makes you happy. And, you know, a lot of folks won't understand it, but I mean, you know.
And it's kind of cool to see the next generation get as excited about a comic book movie as you know, we do.
Yeah, and Suicide Squad's actually, it's set to hit theaters August 5th of 2016 currently, so.
I'm just waiting on Deadpool.
Yeah, man, I've already pre-ordered tickets. That's the thing that happened earlier today, so. I got
Valentine's Day weekend. Go, I mean, watch Deadpool.
That's,
we know it's a love story from the.
It's a mutual agreement too, which I thought was awesome. That rarely happens, you know. Normally it's like, oh my god, you're gonna go do some nerdy bullshit, but now it's like, oh, it's Deadpool, it's badass, I want to be a part of it, so make sure you buy me a ticket too.
I think it's just Ryan Reynolds in tight leather. It's
it may very well be. I don't know. I mean, who knows. Maybe me and some tight leather.
God.
So, another interesting thing, Jada Pinkett Smith.
Oh, you can't like unthink that.
No. It's awesome.
Oh, you bastard. Anyway.
One day you will gouge your eyes and your ears out. So Jada Pinkett Smith is will return as Fish Mooney on Gotham.
I thought they killed her, or am I just mistaken?
I don't know. It says that she's, you know, going to be in several upcoming episodes on season two. She was, you know, supposedly, you know, pushed into a watery grave by the Penguin, but, you know, showrunner Bruno Heller hinted shortly after that the villain could return, and like the comic book. I mean, Gotham's very unpredictable.
No one ever really dies in a comic book. It's worse than a soap opera. They figure out some way to bring him back.
Yeah, I mean, there really hasn't been any information as of yet on how things are going to play out. But, I mean, I don't know. I definitely think Gotham is going to, you know, go for some vengeance. I don't know. A lot of DC news. another thing that excited me, Justice League action coming to Cartoon Network with Kevin Conroy and Mark Hamill doing some voice acting.
Yeah, I'm cautious about that, because I mean, yeah, it's our original Batman and Joker back together again, but the animation style on it from the promotional pictures I've seen just looks very weird. And one of the guys behind it, I mean, there's a lot of guys from the original Batman the Animated Series involved, but one of the showrunners or writer something is the guy from Teen Titans Go, which is absolutely horrendous. I mean, Teen Titans was actually a pretty good animated series, and then they came up with this Teen Titans Go, which they made it a more juvenile, like young kid show where they don't even fight crime anymore. It's just them like hanging out in their tower doing like silly dumb shit all day. There's like no actual battles or anything. It's just completely a waste of
time. I don't know.
So
I mean,
if they do that with Justice League, I'm not gonna be happy.
I don't know. I mean, the way I feel is, you know, Cartoon Network may be a little bit late in the game. You know, I mean, it looks, looking at the animation style, very kiddish. I mean, you know, I would imagine this, you know, probably getting a Y7 rating at best. And I don't know, man. I mean, as an adult and as a, you know, comic book fan that I grew up in, like the way that Netflix is going, the way that EW's put out so many of their shows, like to revert back to this kid style. Like,
yeah, because I mean, well,
I mean, maybe you're trying to captivate, you know, a new generation or something, but
Batman Brave and the Bold was that kind of very cheesy animation style, kind of harking back to like 60s Adam West Batman. But the writing and the action in it was very good, even though it looked kind of weird. So, I mean, I'm hoping it just has a off-putting look, but it, you know, actually has some decent, you know, writing. There's enough guys that were involved in the original Batman the Animated Series and stuff that are involved that I'm hoping they're going to stick with that, you know, darker look. But yeah, if it ends up like Teen Titans Go, I'm like, yeah, it's not going to be worth my time.
No, not at all. I don't know. You know, I'll probably stick around for a couple of episodes, and if it doesn't suit my fancy, then I'll be done with it. I mean, one of my favorites, I think, is, you know, Marvel's Ultimate Avengers. Like, I mean, watching some of that stuff, which is absolutely awesome.
Yeah.
But I don't think we're going to get, you know, the one-liners, the puns, and, you know,
yeah, what made... Disney XD has been killing it with some of their series, but, yeah, Cartoon Network, unless it's, like, you know, Late Night Adult Swim... A lot of their daytime stuff just isn't doing it anymore.
Yep. So, we got another DC topic up next, Legends of Tomorrow. And I got to say, I am pleasantly surprised.
Yeah.
I haven't got to see, I think it was last night's episode or the second episode. But the first episode, like, I'm hooked. Like,
yeah, it's kind of cool it being a team show. It's like, you know, Justice League TV show nearly, but with all the B characters. It's like, you know, the Justice League sidekick team.
But, I mean, it works.
It's kind of cool. They don't really get along, but they're kind of forced together to save the world with, like, you know, heroes and villains alike. And, yeah, because I've seen the two episodes that are out so far. And yeah, it's pretty awesome. I love, like, there's all these Star Wars references in the first episode. Especially they get attacked by some kind of time traveling bounty hunter, and the villains had gone off to, like, a bar or something, and they come back in the middle of the battle, like, we're gone for 5 minutes to get a beer and y'all pick a fight with Boba Fett? What the fuck? Yes.
And it's so fitting. And I mean, there's the elements of time travel and, like, the sonic laser gun.
Rick Hunter's, like, you know, six shooter that, you know, it's like a laser gun, but it looks like an Old West revolver. And he's looks very David Tennant. You know, it's like played by, I can't remember his name, but Arthur Scoville, I can't remember his name, but he was Rory on, like, you know, Doctor Who. So it's some little time travel experience. Yes. Now playing the, instead of a time lord, he's a time master. but yeah, he's got, you know, with the trench coat and everything, he's got a very, very David Tennant look to him.
So I don't know. I'm really, right now I'm hooked. So hopefully the momentum picks up and, you know, we're looking at Stephen Amell to appear as future Oliver Queen in episode 6. So, you know, this will basically be in the year 2046.
Yeah, I heard they're going with the Dark Knight look to our Dark Knight Returns look, where it's one-armed Oliver with the old man goatee and everything.
Yeah, they you know, and in fact I did see Stephen Amell tweet out a picture and he's like, the goatee, it's coming back. And, you know, in the article, they don't necessarily reference, but they said, you know, comic book fans, you know, they're old school fans of Arrow, you know, be on the lookout. We got something for you.
Yeah, because in the comic books, Arrow's always been kind of a Robin Hood looking dude with a blonde goatee and everything. So it's kind of cool that they're kind of giving a nod to the comic book.
Absolutely. And then, you know, we've also got some others set to appear. Damian Dark, Ra's al Ghul, Cisco Ramon. I mean, just a whole bunch of different characters that are going to be making their appearances. So, I don't know. I think there's going to be enough variation in cast and storyline here to carry this on. And I don't know. I'm really hoping to see what the future plays out for Legends of Tomorrow.
Yeah. And it's kind of cool since it is a time travel show. If they complete their mission... really has no effect on the other series, so you know, they don't have to do as many tie-ins with, or if they do a tie-ins, they can always, you know, kind of reset whatever happens, and it doesn't have to affect, you know, the Flash and Arrow stuff.
Absolutely. Now we're going to switch gears to Fox a little bit. This time, talking about X-Files.
Hells yes. Mulder and Scully are back.
Yeah, and it feels like the X-Files too.
Oh yeah, I mean, it even has like the original show opening too. It's the 90s kid in me was very happy with.
Well, apparently not just the 90s kid in you, but you know, they basically scored 21.4 million viewers when including DVR playback and streaming. And basically they are behind only the premieres of AMC's The Walking Dead and Empire this season.
Nice.
So
yeah, it's so true to the original. They've kind of updated the conspiracy theories where, you know, it's less about aliens and more about the government. But yeah, it still has that X-Files feel. I mean, once they, suit up and go back to being at the FBI, it's very much old school X-Files.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I mean, the original series finale from the X-File, so far this opener has beat that season finale by 24%.
And I like it because it's, it's kind of funny that, nowadays, when X-Files was on before, they didn't have smartphones and camera phones and all this other stuff. And now it's like, they still don't even use that. They're talking about something and Scully rattles off some kind of scientific fact. And he's like, how do you know that? She's like, I'm old school. I'm pre-Google. I just know
back
shit.
Back when we had books and shit.
Yeah, I don't have to look it up. I just know shit.
Absolutely. So I don't know. I'm hooked. I mean, my issue now is there's so many great shows. It's where do I find the time?
Yeah.
So that's my greatest battle right now. Luckily, we have DVR, but there's only so much space.
Yeah, I've been off this weekend and I've been trying to burn through a DVR backlog. But yeah, it gets overwhelming if you don't keep up with what you're watching.
Absolutely. So, any additional news, feedback, thoughts?
No, I think that about does it.
Awesome, awesome. Well, that's what I've got.
All right, and with that, check us out on iTunes and Stitcher or wherever podcasts are found. Check us out on our website, cigarnerdpodcast.com. Oh, and one other thing. We've got a live show coming up in April. We've been invited to appear at the International Steampunk Symposium, April, the first week in April, 6th, 7th, and 8th, I believe. Like I said, we're going to be doing a live podcast. We're going to be doing a couple of cigar panels. So if you're in the Cincinnati area or you feel like making a road trip, come up there and see us. Also check us out on the ESO Network at esopodcast.com. Check us out on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Cigar Nerd Pod. Go check out a shirt at realmensmokecigars/cigarnerds. And with that, groovy. And this has been a recording of the Cigar Nerd Podcast with your hosts, Smokin' Joe and Brad Jackson. Join us next time for more adventures in nerddom.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at esonetwork.com.